This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Past Prologue. Hello and welcome to episode 75 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and joining me tonight is someone who has the charm, the elegance, and most certainly the competencies to be a good Cardassian spy. It's my good friend Dave. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Yannick. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Would I not have to be Cardassian to be a Cardassian spy?
Is that mandatory? I don't know.
I don't suppose it is, no. If I was kind of like double agent.
Yeah. Could work.
Possibly, yeah.
How are you, Dave?
I'm doing really well, thank you. All things considered.
Yeah, well, I'm here too. Everything's fine. The good weather is back, so we're doing all right.
Yes. Spring certainly seems to have sprung a little bit early.
Yeah, and suddenly.
Here in the UK. Although by the time this episode actually gets released, it'll be in the middle of summer.
Or winter.
we're kind of heading towards the Duffercast style of episode releases. Release cadence, yes.
In this episode, we are going to review Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 3, Past Prologue. And I'm sure we're going to find stuff to talk about this episode. Although it was a good one. I'm not sure I have a lot of stuff to say about it.
No, nor me.
All right, so that's going to be a short one.
Unlikely. But we'll try. We'll see what we can do.
So without further ado, let's review Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 3, Past Prologue. So, in the teaser, Garak, a Cardassian tailor on Deep Space Nine, unexpectedly stops by Dr. Julian Bashir's lunch table at the Replimat to introduce himself. With little tact, Bashir suggests that Garak is a Cardassian spy. Garak tells him to stop by his shop if he desires new apparel, or wishes, as he does, for an interesting conversation. After Garak tells Bashir he is happy to have met such an interesting new friend today, Bashir rushes to Hops to report the encounter. But Commander Benjamin Sisko is busy trying to head off a Cardassian attack on a Bajoran scout ship. With the ship breaking apart, the sole occupant is beamed to DS9. He identifies himself as Tanalos and requests political asylum. He recognizes Major Kiran Iris and is taken to the infirmary.
There was a definite look of recognition between the two of them.
Yes. Well, he said her name when he saw her, so... Yeah. He knew her. It was interesting, the exchange between Bashir and Garak, as it is almost, I think it's the first time did we meet Garak in the first couple of episodes? I'm not sure.
I don't think so. I don't remember meeting Garak in the pilot, but that doesn't mean we didn't.
No. No, that's true. So, yeah, it was interesting, the exchange, because of all, as Bashir says when he comes to, of all people on the station, Garak chose Bashir, which is probably the least expected person that could be contacted by us. Maybe spy. We don't know that.
But isn't Bashir one of the newest, or newer, should I say, people on the station?
Well, he's also a very young officer. He's just out of the Starfleet Medical Academy. So, yeah, he's very young compared to Dax.
Yeah, well, that's true. Just want to talk about Bashir for a moment, because I picked up, whether this is Bashir or whether this is Alexander Siddig.
Was not named Alexander Siddig in the credit, by the way.
No, he's not. He's L something.
Yeah, he changed his name later.
Season 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've looked into all this stuff, see, my kind of thing. I felt that his style of acting, particularly in that first scene, but I've noticed it throughout the whole of this episode, because this is probably the most Bashir heavy episode we've had so far this season.
True.
I would say. So I felt that the way he was acting is more that of a character in a musical.
Yeah.
Where his movements were over exaggerated, his hyper positive attitude, quite sickening in fact, and the feeling that at any moment he's about to burst into song.
Yeah. 7 years of that.
Great. Can't wait. I hate musicals.
I like Bashir. He's a great character.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he is.
So yeah, it was very interesting. Well, of course, knowing the 7 seasons of DS9, it's the starting point of some relationship between the two of them. I like both of those characters. Garrick is just as he said, plain simple Garrick, but he's not. He's not.
No, not at all. The first time I've encountered the word replimat.
Yeah, me too.
Now, I'm presuming a replimat is kind of like a laundromat, except you don't wash your clothes, you replicate food and drink.
Yeah.
Interesting phrase.
It's a fancy name for a food court.
Basically.
So, on to Act 1. Gul'dan'ar, commanding the Aldara, demands that Tanalos be released to the Cardassian immediately as a Kanma criminal terrorist. Sisko pledges to investigate the matter before proceeding and invites Gul'dan'ar aboard the station, asking O'Brien and Jadzia Dask to stall him with docking regulations. Well, they throw everything they had at him. So.
Well, I kind of got the impression that Sisko was asking O'Brien to maybe make up some regulations in order to hold him back for a bit.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, yeah, regulations, in quotes.
Yes, in quotes. big quotes.
Yeah.
Kira goes with Sisko to the infirmary and explains she and Tana worked together in the Bajoran resistance, and she sympathizes with his cause. Sisko warns her he can't have a divided loyalty under him, and she declares her loyalty is to Bajor. She also points out that splinter groups, like the Konma, will need to be repatriated if the government is going to be rebuilt. When Sisko questions Tana, it's clear Kira is on his side, and Sisko dismisses her. Alone, Tana admits to carrying out brutal acts against the Cardassians, even after the end of the occupation of Bajor, but hints that his days of violence are a thing of the past. He's obviously been subjected to Cardassian torture before, as we see with the scars.
Yes.
Yes.
Did you spot who is actually playing Gul'dan'ar?
No.
A good friend, Vaughn Armstrong.
Oh.
Who played Admiral Forrest in Enterprise. He's one of those character actors who plays so many characters within the Star Trek universe across most of the series.
Yeah. And he's a good actor that doesn't, that doesn't ruin things.
Well, he is a good actor because I didn't realize who he was until I looked him up.
Ah, that would have been a few years before Enterprise, so...
So this is 93.
Two?
Yeah, this is 1993, and Enterprise was 2001, so, yeah, so eight
years.
So, say 9 years, to be generous.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Meanwhile, Kira goes over Sisko's head, asking Starfleet Admiral Rollman to intervene. But the Admiral immediately reports Kira's action back to Sisko, noting that he has a problem on his hands with her insubordination. Soon, Gul'dan'ar arrives in Sisko's office, angry at the docking delays, and demands the fugitive. Sisko politely denies him, saying he would have a problem with Bajor if he gave him up. He grants asylum to Tanalos, and Dana says nothing and leaves. Yeah, when Kira called the Admiral, I was like, no, that's
absolutely not. Yeah. That is one of the worst things you can do.
Yeah.
You don't go straight over your commanding officer's head to go to their superior without, at the very least, speaking to them about it first.
Yeah. Yeah, especially since it's probably, a few weeks between the first episode and this one. So
that's a shame, yeah.
But I was like, no, that's a big mistake. That's not gonna end well. I wanted to mention also the exchange between Sisko and the Cardassian when Sisko said, you know, we're trying to fix the mess. Your guys left when they withdrew, and the Cardassian said, "I accept your apology, but not your explanation." That was kind of a tense moment where both of them were trying to get an advantage, and they managed to stay polite and, you know, not engage in any political or diplomatic fight, I would say.
Yeah, which is, it's difficult under the circumstances, isn't it? Whenever you have an exchange of power, no, not an exchange, a transfer of power, yeah, that you're going to have resentment on pretty much both sides.
Yeah, but they managed to stay polite, both of them.
They managed to stay polite, but there was no politeness between them.
No.
At all.
No, not at all. No. Act 2, then. This review is quite short, so we're going to fly through the acts, but I'm sure we'll manage to find lots of stuff to say. Kira shows Tana to quarters, and they soon debate Bajoran politics. Tana wants a completely free and independent Bajor, whereas Kira sees the need for the Federation's involvement, at least for the time being, until they can fully exploit the wormhole commercially. Tana is skeptical, and Kira understands what all their people have been through. She wants Tana to take a leadership position to bring more people together, but he doesn't see the government as valid and sees her as having adapted to a misguided role. Kira promises her help and support in getting amnesty for him and any who follow him on Bajor, as long as he is no longer with the Conma, which he assures her is true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, right.
Yeah. Because if you remember when he said to Sisko that he was no longer part of the Conma, or maybe just that he didn't want to, that the violence, the days of violence were behind him, when Sisko went out and he turned and his face was toward the camera, he had some kind of expression on his face that was saying, gotcha. And
yeah.
Here, once again, I was like,
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, it would be really helpful if commanders like Sisko were able to watch the episodes back after they've been recorded so that they can see the things that we see that are these kind of like plot cues. If we can pick up on it, I'm sure they could.
That's Spaceball the movie. I don't know if you have seen this movie.
I'm not a Mel Brooks fan.
They have.
I have seen it.
Yes.
But I'm not a Mel Brooks fan at all.
I like this movie. And they have, at one point in the movie, they need to figure out where the bad guys, well, the good guys are, because they are they're bad guys, in quotes. So they get the videotape of the movie they are currently shooting, and they fast forward to see where they will be in the future.
Right, yes. Yeah. It's like kind of that, yeah.
Yeah. Shall we take this opportunity to say hello to the people in our chat room, as I see...
I think so, we've got four people.
Yeah, I see Chris has joined the group. Hello, Chris. Hello, Peter. Hello, Lenny. Hello, Nate.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us tonight. That's the biggest crowd we ever had.
Well, I think people are kind of picking up on the fact that we've switched to a fortnightly recording schedule.
Yeah.
And they're, I don't know, I'm going to go out on a limb here, but perhaps they're missing us.
Really? Oh. Maybe.
I am.
Yes, I am too. But yeah.
I'm missing us.
Yes, me too. But we need some time to finish publishing our backlog, and then we'll come back. Maybe.
Yeah, well, the less said about that, the better.
let's not talk about that right now.
No. Moving on.
Swiftly. Elsewhere on the station, the Klingon sister Lusa and Betor of the House of Duras arrive on DS9.
OMG! I know these characters! Actually, someone in DS9 that I know.
Yeah.
Because I know they were in TNG prior to this. Uh-huh. But I knew them from Generations.
Yes, also.
Because they feature quite heavily in Generations as well. So it was good to see them. And same actresses as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Unwilling at first to relinquish their weapons on the promenade, they relent when Odo gives them Hobson's choice. Do so or leave. So I had to look up what Hobson's choice was, because
I wonder.
I see this thing and I was, who's that guy? And so, yes, yeah, so basically take it or leave it.
Right.
So Hobson was selling horses. So he had like 40 horses in his stable. And so when he got new clients, he always gave them the choice to take the first horse next to the door or take nothing. And they didn't have the choice of the horse. And he chose it. No. So that's what Wikipedia says anyway. So I'm going to consider that it's the truth until someone...
You know more about it than I do then, because I wasn't even aware that there was a story behind it. Something. It was something that someone made up one day. But if there's actually a story behind it, then you have an advantage over me.
I looked that up about 15 minutes ago.
Ah.
Odo promptly notifies Sisko of their presence. They are currently sitting around at Quark's. And I like that when Sisko asked what are they doing, Odo said, they were at Quark's, not for the drink, not for the gumball, and certainly not for the food.
No.
But again, what does Odo know? You know, what does he know about food? I'm not even sure. He needs food.
I think he might just be echoing the sentiment of reputation around Quark's as an establishment. It's not. I wouldn't say it's the kind of place you would, you know, make a conscious choice to go and visit.
True, although it's probably the only choice you have on the promenade at this
moment. Hobson's choice, again.
Yeah.
Pretty good, Quark's choice.
It's, you know, it's replicate of food in your quarters or replicate of food at Quark's.
Wow. But not the apples, knowing what we know from... from the end of Discovery.
Oh, Nate says he has missed us. Yeah, well, we missed you too, guys. Lenny says she didn't miss us, so bye.
No, okay, fair enough.
So we're not coming back because, well, since Lenny is not missing us, there's no point coming back. We're doing this show for you, Lenny, so if you don't miss us...
Ladies and gentlemen, we're looking for a new communications officer.
We're looking for a new
audience.
That's
a joke, by the way.
Meanwhile, Garak and Sun Bashir are observing their outfits closely, merely for tailoring purposes, Garak says.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. They observe Tana arriving, and immediately the sisters leave with him to meet in a private location, demanding payment for a deal they had made. Odo, disguised as a rat, observes the entire illicit exchange. I wouldn't say it was disguised. It was morphed, because it's very difficult to, you know, disguise yourself as a rat.
That is a very good point. I mean, it's only a word, granted, but yeah, the meaning is quite specific in this case. So he wasn't like dressed in a pointy nose and a pair of ears and some whiskers.
Yeah, but that could have been fun though. But
I wouldn't have said it was particularly useful to spy on someone.
Yes.
it's like those things you can buy from joke shops, which are like your fake nose, moustache and glasses all as one thing. You walk around one of those on, and people aren't going to just look at you and say, oh, okay, yeah. They're going to go, what are you up to, you absolute muppet?
Yeah. Right. So that takes us to Act 3 already. Kira has arranged an amnesty hearing in the minister's court on Bajor for Tana. She informs Sisko and also tells him of two other former Konma agents who are also seeking asylum. Sisko promises to protect them as well, and Kira, surprised and relieved, tells him his help is greatly appreciated. Sisko thanks her, then bluntly warns her to never go over his head again to the Admiralty. Did you notice the way the shot was staged with Sisko above Kira, like two steps above her?
I did notice that, yes. it was quite obvious as well.
Yeah, and quite clever to put them in this situation where she had to look up and it was looking down and say, never do that again. And I think it had more power than if they were just face to face.
It did do, but this is what I wanted to mention earlier on. I am in full disagreement with the way that Cisco went about that. In my personal opinion, I think it would be much better had he spoken to her about it privately, as in took her into the office and spoke to her about it. But rather than effectively whipping her over what she did, explain that for things like that, she needs to speak to him. To put fear into her to say, you must do this or else, and then walk away, I don't think is the right approach. But that might just be 26 plus years of the company I'm working for, where that kind of question and challenge approach is encouraged. Now, this might be different in the military, because this is essentially a military setup.
And also, they don't really know each other just yet. You know, Cisco just arrived, and he wants to establish that he's the boss. You know?
Yeah, I get that, but I think he'd already done that.
Yeah.
He established that he was the boss the first day he went there, and they had that conversation about what her role was before he turned up, and she already decided that she didn't like him that much anyway. Yeah. So I thought that was already established.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Just a personal observation more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. A valid one. When Cisco hears from Odo, however, about the dealings between Tana and the scheming Klingon sisters, he reserves judgment and keeps this information from Kira for the time being. I thought that maybe it was suspicious about Kira's motivation, or you know, the role that she can have in this, because why would he keep this information if he was not suspecting her of something?
It's a matter of trust, isn't it, at this point? That there's a breakdown of trust between the two of them.
Yeah, with the previous scenes, yeah, I guess. Mm. Meanwhile, Garak receives the Duras sisters in his shop. After he gives the few lines about fashion, the sisters immediately get to the point of selling Tana to the Cardassians, believing he still represents their interests. Garak eventually negotiates with them. He didn't say that he was still with the Cardassian and so on, but he's exactly the kind of person that would be the perfect spy. Yeah, just, you know, blending in, being just the tailor, regular guy in the station, but still in contact with the Cardassian authorities.
Yeah, although he was trying to deny it pretty much up until the last moment.
Yeah. It wouldn't be a very good spy if someone came to him and said, hey, you're a spy, and say, oh, yeah, you got me.
Yeah, but they already know who he was. And I'm guessing he knew that they knew who he was.
Yeah, well, for the benefit of the viewers, then.
Of course. And it's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Kira happily informs Tana that she has the necessary votes in the ministry for his amnesty. Tana is not interested, though. He reveals the fact that he knew Kira was on the station before he got there, and announces his pride at still being a Konma.
What? Yeah, we knew.
Yeah.
Bleeding obvious, that one.
Yeah. He promises her that he wasn't lying when he said he has renounced the use of violence, but he needs a small ship with warp speed capability to carry out his latest plan, which he can tell her nothing about. Kira asks how he can know she won't go straight to Cisco. Tana just smirks and says that will only confirm what she so adamantly denied before, that she has turned her back on her friends and her own people, and become a willing puppet of the Federation.
Yeah. It's a difficult one.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind the scene that we've already seen.
We've seen a scene.
Of her... The fact that she went running to Admiral, was it Rollman?
Yeah.
About Cisco suggests that she's kind of in support of of the Federation as a whole. Otherwise, she wouldn't have gone straight to her. But other conversations we've heard during this episode suggests she's not a fan of the Federation,
no.
Which is probably the truth. This is what we already know. And yet, something that happens later on, she has to make a choice later on,
mm-hmm.
which is not a choice that I would wish on anybody. Nope. To make that decision between what she believes in and what she knows is right. And whilst I kind of get where Tana's coming from, and to some extent he is correct, it does appear as though she's turned her back on everything that she believed in before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's unfair to say that she's become a willing puppet of the Federation because of what we find out later on.
Yeah, I think she's in a strange position where she has to deal with the Federation, and yet she would love Bajor to be independent, but she's been in the Resistance. Now she's working with the Federation, and I can see the point. You know, I can see Tana's point that she's no longer in the Resistance, and so for him, she betrayed him. She stopped fighting for Bajor, although she thinks she's still doing that. And I think she's still doing that. She's still working for Bajor. So it's just that she does that in another way, and maybe it's not exactly what she wants to do.
But at this point, she's not Federation.
Nope.
At all. Nope. She doesn't become anything to do with the Federation until season 5 or 6 or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not even sure.
It's quite near to the end of the series that she actually gets a commission. But have a look at the past. We've had a couple of examples now where other characters have been in exactly the same situation. You had Worf at the end of season 1 of TNG went through exactly the same thing, where he had to make that judgment call between his loyalty to the Klingon Empire and his loyalty to Starfleet. Loyalty to Enterprise, should I say.
Yeah.
If you go back to the Final Frontier, where Spock had to make a decision between protecting his half-brother and protecting Enterprise. Mm-hmm. And there's another one in my head, and I can't remember exactly what it is at the moment, but this thing happens again and again and again. You have this thing about split and divided loyalties, where a key character will have to make that call, make that decision between what is right for them and what is right for everybody else.
The need of the many versus the need of the few.
It is exactly that.
Yeah.
It is exactly that. And, yeah, I wouldn't want to be in that position.
No.
Under any circumstance.
As we'd see very soon. Act 4. Garak finds Dr. Bashir on the promenade, but dispenses with pleasantries. He notes the two recently arrived Conma terrorists, which immediately worries Bashir. Garak, however, convinces him to come to his shop that evening at exactly 20:55 hours to buy a new suit. Air quotes. Bashir eventually understands and leaves. Unsure of what to do, Bashir asks Sisko for advice. Sisko recommends that he keep his appointment, as he understands it is a means for unofficial communication. They may be signaling a common enemy.
No, really?
Yeah, but that would... I don't agree with Sisko, but maybe he can't know right now. Maybe it's the 7 seasons behind that tells me that. But
yeah.
I'm not sure it's the official way from the government, for the Cardassian government, to inform Sisko. I think it's a Garak thing that he decided on his own to inform the station.
Yes, but why? Well, no, I was going to say why Bashir, but actually that's quite obvious because they'd already struck up that initial contact in the laundromat. No, the replimat,
yeah.
Earlier on that day.
And also, I think, you know, if someone wanted to know, we could leak those information, they probably wouldn't think about Bashir in the first place. Because, as we said, he's the less likely people on the station to be given this kind of information. As you said, it was, when you look Bashir, when you look at the character, you think that he could burst into a song at any time. He's not the kind of guy, you know, that you give secrets to, because he probably can't keep any secret.
Well, actually, we know he can't keep a secret. I think Garak has made the right choice there.
Yeah.
Because anybody of any length of tenure on that station would be a lot more by the book. So something like that, it would be a reportable circumstance. Mm-hmm. So straight to Cisco and report it as an incident. Now, Bashir did that, but he did it in such a way as, this has happened, it sounds a little bit odd, what do I do? Mm-hmm. Rather than, I think Garak's a spy.
When he came to Ops the first time, he said, I've met the spy. That's the first thing he said.
Yes, but he didn't mention the spy thing in this particular upline report.
True.
It was more of a case of, this is a really weird thing that he said to me, what do I do? Rather than, I think something bad's going down, mm-hmm. Bring the cavalry.
Yeah. And then Cisco said, well, I think you can do with a new suit. Go ahead.
Sorry, a new suit. A new suit, yes.
Cisco also asks Kira about the two terrorists, but Kira doesn't reveal what she's learned. Unsure of whom to support, she asks for Odo's advice. In his office, Odo senses that she's torn between loyalties, but also that she knows what she wants to do and is afraid to do it. He gets her cleverly to say it out loud, including that even if she refuses to help Tana, he will still find a way to complete his plan. He convinces her to divulge everything to Cisco by simply calling the commander down to security, since someone wants to talk to him. That was pretty smart from Odo, I think.
Incredibly smart from Odo.
Yeah.
And the fact that he called Cisco down to speak to Kira, it took her by surprise.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that she was expecting him to do that. It took me by surprise because I thought, actually, Cisco is probably the last person she wants to speak to.
Yeah.
And yet, the mere act of her speaking to Cisco about this particular thing goes a huge way to try and rebuild that trust that mm-hmm. had been erased through their previous encounter.
Absolutely. And she seems surprised that Odo called Cisco, but she didn't protest because she knew that was the thing to do.
Yeah.
Bashir, arriving 2 minutes late to Garak's, is quickly herded into a changing room where he is allowed to overhear the Klingon sisters agreeing to sell a small cylinder of bilitrium to Tana in the Bajor system in 4 hours. Once they have departed, Bashir asks what bilitrium is, and Garak informs him that it is a rare crystalline element, the atoms of which can release a tremendous amount of power. Garak also happens to know that Tana was fleeing for the Cardassians for the theft of an antimatter converter. Combined together, Tana would have the ingredient for a bomb of significant destructive capability.
Mm, boom.
Boom.
Literally. Yeah.
So we now know that Garak is somehow in contact with the Cardassian government. Because how else could he know that Tana had stolen an antimatter converter?
Hang on a minute. Are you suggesting that Garak is a Cardassian spy?
No, not suggesting that at all. It's this plain, simple Garak.
It could
Garak.
Be. But wow. What a plot twist.
Maybe he knows someone who knows someone.
Yes.
He knows a guy who knows a guy who knows something.
Well, that doesn't necessarily make them a spy. It just makes them a really, really useful person to know.
Yes, exactly. Yes, someone who knows thing, and maybe we can get things.
Smuggling information.
Yeah. Ned says that he'd love it when you use Muppet. So.
Muppet!
How about we review the Muppet show soon?
Oh, now. Ah, now, you have to be careful because I don't know if you've seen this, but if you try and watch the Muppet show on Disney Plus,
it's the new one.
You get a disclaimer that comes up and says that this, I can't remember the exact wording, but basically this series contains elements that people might find offensive. It's basically a content warning for the Muppets, for the Muppet Show. You know, the kids program from the 70s and 80s? Yeah. Has a content warning. Because there are certain things in there that people could find and take offense to.
Yeah. It was, what, 50 years ago? So...
Yeah, easily.
Content changed, you know.
Mm.
Stuff that were okay back then are not okay right now. So,
Nate just said, isn't that the whole idea that comedy is a little offensive? To some extent, yes. I would say that all comedy should be offensive. Or, it's designed to be offensive. Otherwise, it wouldn't be comedy. And yet, when you're talking about comedy being offensive in the scope of a children's television program, that perhaps maybe you should sort of lean off the offense a little bit. But to give one of the examples, Johnny Cash, the country singer, he was singing in front of the Confederate flag, which is a pre-Union emblem, which some Americans find an incredibly offensive symbol. Why exactly he was doing this, I don't know. It does seem a little bit odd, but people do take offense to it.
Yeah. So, anyway, we're not going to review the, I don't know how many years of Muppet Show. So,
well, if we did the Muppet Show, we'd also have to do Sesame Street, Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Fraggle Rock. We'll do Fraggle Rock as well.
Yeah.
Because that was all Jim Henson.
Yes. So we're in Act 5 now. The final act of this episode. Kira, under orders from Sisko, provides Tana with the runabout USS Yonsei-kyong to go to his rendezvous with the Klingons. Sisko and O'Brien are nearby in the USS Ganges, lurking behind Bajor 8's moon, scouting out the rendezvous area for the illegal weapon deal. After the bilitrium is exchanged for 13 kilograms of gold-pressed latinum, Sisko gives chase to Tana and Kira. 13 kilograms of gold-pressed latinum, that doesn't seem a lot. I mean, Quark used to exchange lots of gold-pressed latinum. It seems that it's a bargain for a bilitrium cylinder, I think it was. So I don't know if they adjusted the prices of stuff later on in the series, but I mean, that seems like you could have gotten lots more of explosive. Although maybe he had trouble getting the gold. We don't really know how the gold came on the station. Probably with the two other Gunma guys.
This might be right why there was only 13 kilograms of it in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to be doing smuggling, you want to do it in small parts. Yeah.
Although there doesn't seem to be any custom of stuff like that on DS9. Every time you see someone arriving, they just get out of the airlock with their luggage and there's no control, nothing. So it seems to be quite easy to smuggle stuff on the station. Tana finally sees through Kira's act. He strikes her to the floor and then combines the bilitrium he just purchased with an antimatter converter, activating the weapon. They go to warp and head toward DS9. With the Ganges and the Cardassian's warship Aldara closing fast, Kira learns that DS9 is not the target of the weapon. The target is, in fact, the wormhole. By collapsing its entrance and shutting it forever, Tana seeks to remove Bajor from prominence in the Alpha Quadrant, so that it will be left alone by both the Federation and the Cardassians. That's one way of doing that, but it's a fight between Tana, who wants to make Bajor great again.
Don't go there.
Have Bajor for the Bajorans.
Yeah, yeah.
And Kira, we would like to see her homeworld grow. Being independent by growing, not by getting, you know, by closing on itself. I think they both want the same thing in the end, that they will be independent, but they really don't have the same target to achieve that.
No, exactly. Like you quite rightly said, one of them wants to do it by opening it up to the world and increasing its prominence, up to the universe and increasing its prominence. The other one wants to do it by effectively locking it away.
Yeah. Yes. At the last second, however, Kira steers the Yang Sekyong straight into the wormhole. She and Tana fight, but he finally manages to release the weapon. However, the roundabout is now in the Gamma Quadrant, on the other side of the wormhole, and the bomb explodes harmlessly. Following them through the wormhole, Sisko confronts Tana via the communication system. Tana angrily says he still has Kira as a hostage, but Sisko informs him that his choices have been reduced to two. Surrender now, or be returned to the Cardassians. Quaking visibly, Tana chooses the former.
This is the third Hobson's choice in the episode, really.
Is it?
Because there was only one choice.
Yeah, that's true. Although it's not exactly the same. The Hobson's choice is, here's your choice or nothing. So he really had two choices, but he could only take one.
Yeah, precisely. if one of the choices isn't an option.
Yeah, okay. I understand. I see your point.
It's a bit fiddly, this whole thing, but yeah.
Thanatos is taken back about DS9 and incarcerated by Odo. Although Kira has been labeled a traitor by Tana and lost his friendship, she has begun a new one with Commander Sisko. Yeah. I thought, you know, Sisko wanted to start to say something when Tana said to Kira that she was a traitor. But he didn't say anything. And I think it's even stronger, you know, that it's like, yeah, no, I don't have to say anything. You understand that I'm on your side now and we're going to be friends now.
Yeah, I think if he had said something, it would have maybe destroyed the moment slightly. Yeah. But by not intervening, I suppose it's given Kira the nudge that she needs to let her know that the decision she's made is actually the right one.
Mm-hmm.
The choice she made to disrupt Tana's plan, mm-hmm. was the right thing to do.
Yeah,
and I thought that whole scene was actually quite lovely, because to watch Sisko and Kira walk off at the end of the episode, the last thing we saw was the two of them walking away. And I think if anything was going to prove where Kira's loyalties lie, this was probably the perfect test for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because although we are fully aware that she completely believed in Tana's cause, she completely believed in his end game, she did not approve of the methods. Ultimately, because of that, that made her decide where her loyalties are.
Yes.
And that is with Sisko.
Mm-hmm. And I think she gained Sisko's respect and friendship. But yeah.
Absolutely. It'll take time to build up, but yes.
The friendship will come later, but she gains his respect, which is the first step, you know, to friendship.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, that's the end of the episode, and I liked it. Because it's one of those character building episodes where you can see the complex situation in which Kira is between the resistance, the Bajoran government, the Federation, and she has to, you know, to manage all that. We also, when she goes to Odo's office, we also realize that she's not proud of lots of stuff she did when she was in the resistance, and she's a very complex character, and that episode establishes that, and it's good that we have that early in the series so we can understand how the character works.
I totally agree. I think having that identification of who Kira is nice and early in this series. The first double episode, the pilot episode, was far too much concentrating on the storyline at hand. The only people we actually found out anything about were Sisko, Dax,
Jake.
I think that was probably just the three of them.
Yeah.
As you would kind of expect for you know, the first one, the whole thing is about Sisko. It's about the station. It's about Sisko taking over the station from where it was left behind. So I'm hoping that we'll spend the next few episodes building up the characters, the key characters, what we would have called the bridge crew, the ops crew.
Agreed.
Over the next few episodes. So yeah, I think as this episode goes, if you take it for what it was supposed to be, which was a pretty decent story,
yeah,
and a really good character build, because it wasn't just Kira we started to pick up on; it was also Odo and Garrick as well. And it was nice. It was an enjoyable storyline. The initial problems that I had with the pilot, because I made a big deal about the video quality, I made a big deal about the acting quality. They were there, but they didn't bother me.
No.
And I think that's because of the storyline.
Yeah.
I was engaged with the storyline, that those little quirks didn't bother me anymore, which I hope will stay that way.
Yeah. I think the acting was actually better than in the pilot.
Oh, yeah.
It had improved already.
Mm.
Nana Visitor seemed to be more acting than pretending, if you know what I mean. She was less tense. I don't know how to say that, but
she was given the opportunity, considering how much of the story was hers, to stretch her legs out a bit and actually spend that time acting and bringing out the character of Kira Nerys as part of this storyline.
Yeah,
but I still find Sisko a bit enigmatic. He just seems.
He is an enigmatic character.
I know he's supposed to be, but I can't find myself relating to him at all. Because he's very withdrawn. I know we spent a lot of time in the pilot understanding who he is and how he ticks. But even with that knowledge, even with that understanding of what makes him who he is, I still can't relate to him.
It's part of the character and also part of the actor. Well, because in the What We Left Behind documentary, there was one section of that where they talked about Avery Brooks being the director of some episodes, and that apparently when he wanted something changed in the scene, you know, they were shooting first take, and then he would like come to the actors and just say one word, and then go back behind the camera. They were supposed to understand what he meant. So I guess it's part of the character and also part of the actor that is very enigmatic like that. And but it's one of my favorite characters in the Star Trek universe, this one. I like him a lot.
I haven't seen enough of him to make a judgment.
No, I guess, respect. Yeah.
I can only go by what I've seen.
You need to watch a whole bunch more of DS9 to appreciate Sisko.
Yeah, I suppose I could do that for, you know, the next few months.
Yes.
But I think if you look at the, well, we'll say the commanding officers of all of the series that I have actually watched so far, Kirk, there's nothing hidden with him.
Nope.
He is Kirk. Picard, yes, there is quite a bit of, I was about to use the word enigmatism, but I don't think that's even a word.
It is now.
There's a lot of hidden aspect to him. You see the captain, but you get a glimpse of who he actually is as a person. Not much, but enough. But you tend to only find that after the first few episodes. Archer was Archer. Yeah. He was very much your friend and your colleague and your compadre. Like I say, I'm just not seeing that with Sisko at the moment. But I know that you've seen Deep Space Nine multiple times, so you know pretty much everything there is to know about Sisko, everything there was ever meant to be about Sisko. I'm at completely the other end of the scale, totally the other end of the scale.
That's good, so that we can exchange ideas. And
yeah.
And it's not boring, like, oh, he's good. Yes, he's good. You know, so.
But it also gives you plenty of opportunity to tell me I'm wrong.
But I won't do that. I will let you figure out by yourself that you're wrong.
That too. that's a better way of doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, in summary, the episode, I really, really enjoyed it.
Yes. So did I. So great show, and nothing else to add, really. I loved it.
Cool. Oh, I have some trivia.
Yeah, go ahead.
The first item of trivia is one of those duh moments. Now, I've taken this trivia item directly from Memory Alpha. I did not write this.
Okay.
This is the first time the Klingons appear on Deep Space Nine.
Duh.
This is episode 3, people. Or to the purists, this is episode 2. It's a bit of a non-event.
Depending if you watch
four,
the Netflix order or not.
Yes, bad Netflix. The only sequence of episodes that gets it wrong. Yeah, because according to Netflix, this is episode
4?
3.
3, yes.
Because they're numbering schemes off anyway.
Yeah.
Whereas this one that was produced 4th, released 3rd, on Netflix is episode 2. Yeah. This is the first episode of Star Trek? This is the first episode of Star Trek in which no ship named Enterprise appears.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, there was an episode of the animated series where the Enterprise was not featured in the episode itself, but because it appeared in the opening credits, it still counts. So this is the first episode in Star Trek, in the Star Trek production chronology,
mm-hmm.
that does not feature the Enterprise.
Wow.
Or an Enterprise, shall I say. Vaughn Armstrong, mentioned him earlier on. It's his first appearance on DS9. Duh. His second in Star Trek after his appearance in Heart of Glory in Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
His next appearance is in the episode When It Rains, which is right towards the end of Season 7 of DS9. But Vaughn Armstrong has now played 12 roles in Star Trek, and no one has played that many roles in Star Trek.
Congratulations.
I know that Jeffrey Combs he's close to that. It might be like 10 or 11, but yeah, no one has done as many different characters as Vaughn Armstrong. This episode is the first one to introduce gold press latinum that we spoke about earlier on. In this episode, the value of latinum is defined by its weight, but later episodes established the usage of divisions like slips, strips, bars, and bricks.
Awesome.
I think that's probably the only ones I wanted to mention. There's a huge bunch of them, but and there's one that mentions the friendship between Kira and Odo is first established here.
Yeah,
we get more of a concept of the kind of trust that she has in him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it goes back to, I think it's a book.
A book? You mean that thing with papers?
No, it's not a book. They mention an episode in Season 2. Ah, right. Okay, so Peter Allen Fields, who's one of the script writers, he explored the origins of Odo and Kira's friendship in a Season 2 episode, Necessary Evil. But this was it was his idea to start building that friendship up. And spoiler alert, they actually end up dating.
In the series?
In about 6 years' time. Yeah. Well, I don't know whether it's in series or not.
Yes.
It mentioned it in 2375, which I think would either be Season 6 or 7.
Season 6 or 7, yeah, at the end of the series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it on the trivia front.
Well, thank you for that. Learn stuff tonight. Well, I guess if you have nothing else about this episode, we are going to wrap up this review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode 3, Past Prologue. So, as usual, thank to all of you for listening to our show. You can help us spread the love for this podcast by hiding in a changing room next time you buy some clothes and whisper the name of our podcast to anyone entering the booth next to you. Or if you think that would be too creepy, and honestly, that would be.
Yeah.
Don't do that. You can simply share the address of our website on social media.
That has got to be the most inappropriate suggestion we have ever made so far.
Yes,
in 75 episodes.
That's because we're running out of ideas.
Wow. I mean, congratulations for coming up with it, but
thank you.
Seriously, where on earth did that come from?
I have no idea.
Is there anything you want to tell us?
No.
And you can find our website at tlgreyholtz.org, where you will see all of our show notes for every episode we've ever produced, our reviews, and you can leave a comment at the bottom of every episode.
And if your subspace communication array doesn't work, you can send us an email at feedback@tlgreyholtz.org. That still works.
You can also find us on social media. We're on Twitter and Facebook. Our username for both of those is TEGHpodcast. And we're also on Telegram at t.me/TEGHpodcast, which is the only place you will get the link to our unlisted live stream, where you can see us record these episodes live and in person. Yes. And, of course, a huge shout-out to our never-to-be-sacked communications officer, Lainey, for keeping everything basically in check for us.
Yes. We are so bad at everything, so we need help.
In many ways.
Thanks to Memory Alpha, as always, we have based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by attribution, non-commercial license, and when we say based, we literally used their review this week because it was good.
No, you added some stuff.
Yeah, well, a few bits and bobs here and there.
The rest of this show is released under a Creative Commons by attribution share alike license. See our website for details.
This podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. Check out our website at otherside.network for all our great shows and hosts.
Indeed so. Our next episode will be a review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode 4, A Man Alone.
And that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you, Nate. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Lainey, and thank you, Peter, for joining us in the live chat room. Thank you, Dave, for joining me in the live StreamYard thingy.
Chat room. No, you're very welcome.
As we said I was going to say last fortnight, but let's say last time. Last time, we're switching to a 2 weeks recording schedule. And I kind of miss our weekly recordings, but we need the time to empty our backlog, and then we will be back. We'll be back anyway if there's a live Star Trek on, I was going to say on air, but it's on wire.
On stream.
On stream,
yes.
We will be back.
Like I said last time, the fortnightly thing may change. We may go back to weekly. We may go to like 2 monthly. It really does depend. But
yes,
as Yannick quite rightly says, once we've got this backlog of episodes cleared down, which I'll be honest, since we last spoke and it's not got down at all, then we'll review it again.
Yes, absolutely. Well, right now we're going to end this recording and we will start a new recording in 2 weeks. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya.
My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and joining me tonight is my good friend Dave. And why don't I read my script?
Outtake number one, in the bag.
And she sympathizes.
It's like synthesizers, yeah. Same word.
Cisco warns her he can't have a divided loyalty under him. And she...
Oh, boy.
And she indignantly declares the... Hello, Alex.
Yeah, we've been joined by another guest. Say hello.
Hi, again.
Hi, again. Well, even again, you've not been here yet.
Hi.
Hi. Dingo.
Kira, under orders from Cisco, provides Tana with the roundabout USS Yangtze Kiang.
I think you might be saying that wrong.
Lurking behind Beja 8's moon. Reconnaissance. I knew I was going to fumble this one.
Isn't that a French word?
No, it's not.
Oh, is it not? I honestly thought that was a French derived word.
You've been listening to a member of the Otherside Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.